This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Tech, show number 147, recorded on December 12th, 2013. Here at Home Tech, we cover all your favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home, news, reviews, product updates, and the conversation, all for the average tech guy. I'm your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in Bellevue, Nebraska, and we post the show with world-class show notes each week out at theAverageGuy.tv. If you have questions, comments, or contributions, you can contact the show. Just send me an email, podcast@theAverageGuy.tv. Really, Jim is better, Jim@theAverageGuy.tv. Find me on Twitter, @JCollison, or you can follow the show's schedule on @TheAverageGuy.tv. If you're watching us on Google Plus or on YouTube, you can also join us for the live chat during the show. It's right below the main video window. And if you're catching us on Google Plus or on YouTube, head out to theAverageGuy.tv/live to catch all that is going on out there. All right, a couple guests for us, one back and one regular, all the way over to the left, at least on my left, is Christian Johnson. Christian, how are you this evening?
I'm doing good. We're putting the landing gears down for finals here and getting ready to ship back out. So looking forward to some time off and getting back up to cold, snowy Buffalo.
Cold and snowy Buffalo for a little bit of Christmas break. When's school start again then?
January 27th. So
that's not too bad. Wow, you get a long break.
Yeah.
Nicely done. All right, well, good. Well, welcome. And then back, he's the Tron Smart guy, and actually we know him as my Best Buy insider. He's Kyle Wilcox. Kyle, how are you?
Hi, I'm good.
Welcome back. Good to have you. Anything new at Best Buy we need to know about?
I don't know. Galaxy S4 blowout sale for a whole month. We have our own cell phone company now.
Did you have to work on... You have your own cell phone company.
Yeah, I don't know. It's all right, I guess. It's called Zact Mobile. It's another prepaid company. You can only buy it from Best Buy Mobile specialty stores. So.
And is that like Cricket or like...
Cricket or Boost or Virgin Mobile or Net10 or it's okay. Something like that. The main benefit that I think is cool is there's a app that parents can get, and you can control pretty much every single thing about that phone, like how many text messages they get, who they can text, how much data they can get, what apps they can download. Like parents can control whatever they want to about it. So
very cool. And did you work Black Friday? You're in a specialty store, not in the big store, not the thrust
I mean, it's the busiest day, but our store opened at 8 p.m. on Thursday. I didn't have to get there till 7:30 on Friday. I stayed until like 10 that night. Yeah. So
Does your store get hit like the big stores do?
Yep, okay. Pretty much. I mean, it's our busiest day of the year for sure. So
it's all it's retail that makes the world go round. So good stuff. Sorry you had to work. I took the whole weekend off and it was pretty nice. But it's the advantage to not being in retail. Couple announcements just before we get going. You probably noticed that the music, if you're listening to this in the recorded version, the music, the pre-show music has changed, you know, the stuff you listen to on the way in. My son's band has actually recorded some Christmas music. My oldest son is in a band, and they did some really nice job on Christmas music, and it sounded so good, I asked him if they'd let me play bits of it during the show, and so that intro is from their album. I'll include the link in the show notes for you if you want to get a hold of that, and if you're in the live stream, hang tight. I'll get that link for you, and we'll put that out as well. So the intro, and then I'm going to play a whole song at the end of the podcast. So stay around for that. Some pretty good Christmas music. It's actually free if you want to go out and download it. I'll include the link out there as well. And his band is called Adelaide, and they do a pretty nice job. So congratulations, Adam and Phil and Alex, for putting that together. They did a real nice job. And then I want to give you a warning, too, before we go. This is a total Nerd Alert show. So we've got Christian's Corner up first here. And Kyle, I'm going to ask you to hold on for the ride because we're going to uncork Christian and just let him go on a nerd fest to start things off. And so if you are ready for some serious tech, you have found the right place here on Home Tech. So that's coming up here in 1 minute. So Christian, are you ready to take a deep breath and lead us into the new experience? Christian's Corner. All right, here we go. Let's do it.
All right, so there's a lot of really random stuff that came up on my radar in really a non-uniform order, all of it which fascinates me, of course. I'm hoping my goal is to get at least one or two things on my list that either remotely or very closely touches you and makes you think that this is cool. So First on the list is a bit of a step back, blast from the past a couple episodes ago, more than a couple. We talked about some of the DDoS issues, some of the security issues with virtual private servers, and I wanted to give an update on that because I told you that my interim solution was to block certain countries by using IP ranges within a firewall within that Linux server. But then I eventually gave some thought to the recommended security pattern because I really don't want to have this overly hardened, complicated system to get into, especially when I have customers and sites like The Average Guy on there where other people are logging into the system other than me. So I still wanted it to be user-friendly without and still be able to tighten security. And the happy medium I found for that was to actually implement public-private key authentication only for the root account. So normally when you see this happen on things like Amazon Cloud, you'll do it for the entire box, meaning that anyone whose password authentication is completely disabled, so you don't log in with a password, and anyone who tries to brute force guess a password on the system won't be able to because the SSH client will just come back and say, we don't support password authentication, goodbye, and it kills the connection. But in this case, what this lets me do is essentially use a private public key RSA authentication, you know, again, one of the most secure, strong algorithms out there today, on the root account of all of the VPS systems that I'm running. So that gives me the security of automatic bots will normally guess the root account and not any other username accounts. So you'll just see, if you go through your security logs, you'll see a lot of guest entries for the root account and then eventual log off. So this eliminates that by they can't even guess passwords anymore because it's a key. That means you really don't want to lose your key. Means you want to encrypt a copy of the key that you're going to save on your hard drive someplace in case it gets lost, and have a backup encrypted somewhere. But if you're responsible enough with that, it really adds a nice layer to security and still lets your client accounts, which are less privileged on the system, to have password-based authentication for FTP and some of those other common services. So that's kind of a security update on that front.
Very nice. I have no idea what you said.
Okay. It's all right. You guys are going to get through this.
Anybody else in the chat room catch that? No, just kidding. Keep going.
So. But hopefully this is one you'll catch. This is one of my favorites of the week. I don't know if it's Yunu, but I think it's Yono or Yo. Yeah, I want to say it's called
I
Yono.
Like Yono. That's.
I think
I
it's
like.
Yono. I think yeah, that's. I think that's what the goal was. But
I like Yono. Yeah.
Yono is a really fantastically awesome application for me because I used to be a big Seismic fan, which Seismic was one of the only software applications that let you integrate Facebook, Twitter, really any social media account into one streamlined interface where you could see everything in one panel and you could post to all your social media accounts in one shebang, right? And you could check or uncheck boxes for which accounts you wanted to post it to. So if you wanted to post a message to Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, bam, you could happen. If you wanted to read all your feeds at once, you could do that too. And so Seismic got bought out by another company and that whole thing has changed and it's really an ugly place that doesn't really work the way it used to anymore, so I stay away from it. But yeah, that is true.
Well, we saw him in the background there, which was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Proof of life. Let's just say
true. Proof of life. That's important. Anyway. So I finally was able to find Yono, which, again, I've looked for replacements to Seismic for quite some time and really haven't found anything attractive. And then Yono came along, and not only does it have, you know, the standard desktop app that I really loved with Seismic, that it integrates as a Chrome extension, which is fabulous because while I'm browsing in Chrome, I can just pop up a Yono tab, I can send a post out to all my social media accounts, I can read in a lot of different feeds at once, and it really consolidates me having to run around like a minion whenever I want to find different stuff happening in my network. So really glad that app is out there, really glad it's free, and really nice to see both browser integration and desktop integration for that application.
So covering Facebook, I don't know why MySpace, but it is, YouTube, Twitter, what is this one? Can't remember. Friend feed, LinkedIn, AIM, Google Talk, Yahoo, and Foursquare.
Yeah, and well, one of the other big ones that
Flickr was the other one, sorry.
you also failed to mention Yammer, which is big for me because I have two different Yammer networks that I have to log into, and they don't allow for multiple sign-on. So you have to either log into one, just like Facebook, can't log into multiple accounts at once. Google, of course, has gotten fixed that. But this is really nice because I can switch between my two Yammer networks instantly, and I can still post and read messages without having to log out of one and into another. So that's really awesome. And yeah, so that's a good thing.
Very cool.
And
This is interesting. I'll
yeah.
give this a try. I'm all about kind of trying to get efficient in the way I do social, and I've been doing more and more social recently with Gallup. You know, we're trying to kick off a whole social strategy there. So this might I already use like TweetDeck for Twitter, which has been really helpful because I have three accounts and that supports multiple and you can flip between them. So this may be a nice addition to that as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really whether you're doing like you with HR at Gallup and looking at a lot of different social media stuff coming in today, or or just trying to consolidate all
So,
your chatter.
Christian, I assume I can get like multiple Yahoo or multiple Twitter accounts. I could load most multiple Facebook accounts. Okay. I really only have one LinkedIn, but I got a bunch of Google accounts. It would be nice. So I think this would try. And the nice
That's
thing,
sorry, the only thing it doesn't integrate with right now is Google. I really wanted to put my Google Plus in, but I didn't
Oh,
see when
you
to
know
do
what?
that.
It integrates with
Google
the
Talk.
Google
Yeah,
Talk
does Google
functionality, but
Talk.
not Google Plus yet.
So you can chat, but you can't get your feed from Google Plus, which is not bad considering Google Plus is relatively recent, so.
And it looks like, so you say it integrates with Chrome, so if I can install it as a Chrome app, and then it'll follow
Yeah.
me around, right? No matter what,
Yeah.
log into Chrome, it'll just show up and
Right.
lock me in. They're
Right.
asking if it
Yeah,
has an
I run it
Android.
as.
Does it have an Android app? I don't think it does. It looks like desktop and browser. So it supports
Yeah, but.
Firefox and Chrome from a plugin perspective, and then all three versions, Mac, Windows, and Linux.
Right. The only thing I can think of is does Chrome browser on Android support Chrome add-ins the same way as it does on the desktop?
I don't think it does.
Yeah, I don't think
I'd
so
have to
either.
double check because I've got
Yeah, I'm
Chrome on
pretty sure it
Android,
doesn't.
and I don't think it brings like I use Freely, and I also use TweetDeck in the Chrome browser, and it doesn't. I don't think I've seen it. I might. I could be wrong there. I could
Yeah,
be
I
wrong. Hey,
no.
it even runs on a portable USB key.
Yeah, well,
Yeah.
yeah. So
Very cool.
that's an average guy app to
Yeah. Yeah, let
try.
me ask Kyle if he. Kyle, do you use any use for these social networks? Are you using any helpers like this to kind of pull everything together?
No, I mean I'm pretty much set just monitoring everything one at a time. I just
Natively.
I check Facebook when I want to check Facebook, and I check Twitter when I want to check Twitter. Being on Windows Phone, I can't check Google Plus at all. So, but
All right.
so.
Very cool. Very cool, Christian. What else you got?
All right, so now we're going to go back to more geeky before we
Nerd
get to the
alert.
ultimate geek where you're just going to be like, I don't know what he's talking about. All right.
Ultimate? There's still more geekness?
Oh, there's, yeah.
All right,
But
go.
first,
Go.
so I don't know how many of you guys have heard of or used Pingdom before, but it's a pretty popular service for checking uptime of websites. And with Pingdom, you typically get one free, website that you can do checks and uptime and downtime and all this, analysis of, which is really cool. However, it costs like anywhere from $7 to $9 a month for their basic plan to get above that, one check limit. And I was kind of frustrated because it really is a nice application. And I would like to have something similar like it for all the other servers that I'm looking at. And so after and again this is another thing where I've done a lot of research into the options before and nothing really appealing ever came up, and so it's been like the month of all these little random side Google projects of mine like suddenly coming back with actual logic. And I found this great service that's completely free called Uptime Robot. And it's got a great interface, really nice APIs if you're a developer. But the really easy thing is that it's totally free. You just put in an email and a password, and away you go. And you get up to 50 checks, and you can set a whole bunch of different alerts and monitoring. You can set it up to watch your blog, to watch Reddit, to watch WordPress, and it really, it'll, you know, if something's going down or isn't working the way it should be, you'll get a text to your phone as early as 30 seconds from when it happens. So for a system admin, this type of stuff is really important. And I used to use a custom script in Google Documents to handle it, and it was very inaccurate, and it always sent me emails when nothing was happening, and I really hated it. And this is really the first free, robust solution that just has a nice, clean, slick interface and really gets the job done.
I like it. I'm gonna try this, because this is, you know, one of those things. And, you know, most of us, I think if you're listening to the show, you're probably, you've either got a blog or you maybe even a podcast, or you've got some sites that you want to, you know, keep up and monitoring. And, you know, these, I like the BI on this, you know, the dashboards.
Yeah, that's what's really nice.
Slick.
Yeah.
And I just, while you were talking, Christian, I just set up an account. So, I mean, I set it up, I verified it, and it's up and running now at this point. So you're saying at this point, let me show some folks what this looks like just a second. Let's jump into this thing and see if we can get, let me log in. And so, Christian, what are you monitoring with it right now?
So I'm monitoring my website at BiosMods, which means that any other customers on that server, if something were to happen to that server, I would know that all those customers are affected. So like, if I know I were to get a message about BiosMods, I know it's going to affect Tag. So I'm using it to monitor all three of my VPSs that I have running.
Okay. And so that is the dashboard right there. So I'm assuming here, Kyle, did you need to say something?
No, I was just, I mean, is this going to add like any traffic, or if you pay per bandwidth, it's probably sending out a tiny little check. So it's probably not a huge amount, but is it going to drive traffic or affect anything, or what's it using to get it done, and how's it going to affect the site?
So you can actually set up what type of check you want it to do on the system. I would say the two most popular ones in the list for me are either ping-based or HTTP-based, where with a ping, it's just pinging to see if it gets a response, and with HTTP, it's actually going to see if the page is coming back with a 200 OK signal. Both are completely valid based on what you want. What type of monitoring you want. Obviously, if you do a HTTP check, that means if like any small thing isn't working right, you're going to know about it. With a ping check, you know that the server itself is online and answering requests, but it's still possible that something strange could happen. Like, let's say the database server goes down, but the web server's still up. Well, the web server might still be pinging and giving you a perfect response, but that doesn't mean your web application is actually working. So the HTTP, I think, is kind of the fullest check. It's not really going to affect your traffic numbers or who's going to show up at your site. You may get, in Google Analytics, you might see a little bit of a spike, but in terms of unique visitors, that's not going to be affected. And I really haven't seen any change in my numbers since I've implemented this. So
did I set this up right, Christian? I just got this no monitors found for keyword. Did I put something wrong in there that... Edit. Let's
click edit. Hold on. And then,
here's a monitor information. So I'm going to monitor the traffic, right? I'm getting the tag name. Here's the IP address, monitoring interval.
Yep.
And I'm saying send it to my Yahoo account.
Yep.
And there's some, if I had to authenticate, there would be some information that I could put in there, right?
Yep.
And then okay, we'll close that up. I have no idea what that, I typed that in here. Maybe that's
yeah, it's looking for tag.
So there we go. So now it's configured correctly.
Yep.
And I'm assuming, so it's set every 5 minutes. So this won't start updating until it's been at least 5 minutes from now. It'll ping it, right? And then bring some stats back. Okay, so we'll come back to it later, a little bit later in the show, and see kind of how it's doing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to my dashboard now, because I've had my dashboard running for a couple days now to check, again, all my VPSs and my home VPN and network there. So I've seen so far 47 hours, 57 minutes uptime on all systems. Everything is green, no downtime recorded. And if I click my dashboard... Again, this is one of the things that's great about this, is that it's a really nice, simple app, and it's not not cluttered, not a headache. Yeah. Just, you know.
Yeah, it looks good.
Yeah.
Looks good. This is kind of average guy stuff. I mean, this is something, if you've got a site you want to monitor or something you want to do, every 5 minutes is probably good enough for most people. And you saw how quickly I set that up. So I would think this is like an average guy monitoring tool.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's
and
nice.
UptimeRobot.com. We'll have that in the show notes if you want to go out and take a peek at that.
Yep, yep.
All right,
so,
what else you got?
Transitioning from that, I'll reorder my list so that it's just not another mind culture shock. I was pleasantly surprised logging into WordPress today that WordPress 3.8 came out. Did the upgrade. It looks fantastic. The big feature change in WordPress 3.8 is that the admin panel is now completely responsive design. Looks a lot sleeker. Colors are a lot better. You can choose different color schemes. So really, it was the update for the administrator, not the update for the user, as I like to call it.
Yeah.
And simpler theme and widget management in general. So this was a score for anyone who has had to deal with a WordPress admin console. This is a good update for you.
It's been so bad, I never even tried to do an administration on my phone. I mean, I wouldn't even dream of it. I think with 3.8, you know, they really took everything from WordPress.com and ported that, right? WordPress.com has been like this for a while now, and I think they took they kind of used that as the test grounds, and then it was ready to go, and they put it into WordPress.org. It looks good, although, Christian, I'll have to admit, you know, I've been messing around with HomeGadgetGeeks.com, and I upgraded, and then I was going to load a new theme, and it borked the whole setup. So, well, HomeGadgetGeeks.com works right now. I can't get into the admin console, and I don't know if it was the upgrade or when I installed that. You know, I was installing that gadgetry theme that you and I talked about, and down went the admin console. So I don't know.
Careful, Jim.
Yes, you must
be
back.
Trickier than you think.
It's just for fun. Just as a follow-up, that is, we're most likely moving this show to Home Gadget Geeks, that name. All the hosts and the guests will all stay the same. We're just going to change the name to protect the innocent. But in this case, I'm running that on an Azure server on Microsoft for free. Although I did change it to a shared account, and it's going to start charging me a little bit. I'm not exactly sure how much it is. It might be $3-4 a month, but trying that out to see if I can really do a WordPress site on Azure and how affordable is it. That might be a good option for folks who are looking for an easy way to install a WordPress client and get that up and running. And in this case, you install WordPress. It's 3.6 right now is what's up there, but it would automatically, when you're done, it would upgrade to 3.8, and you'd have all those features available to you. Not a bad way to do it. And Drashna says, Jim, does Jim have a backup of the site? It's brand new. No, I don't have a backup of the site. We're just messing around with it. But Drashna, you're right. At this point, we're just messing around with some different things, and I'm not even sure we're going to take it. No, not Home Tech Geeks. Home Gadget Geeks. Yeah, we're dropping. Although we could go Home Tech Geeks. That would work too. But in fact, that would be probably the most efficient way, is to just slam Geeks onto the end of that. We're doing that because we're going to partner with Dave McCabe and that network, the Geeks network over there, a little bit closer. But Home Tech Geeks, I don't know. Home Tech, I don't know. Let's talk about that later. Christian, what else do you got?
All right, so this is the end of the normal section and the beginning of the Christian section of this.
The true corner. Christian's corner, as we define it, right?
Okay. Yes, the true Christian's corner.
This is going to get ugly. Here we go.
Yeah, so here we go. IBM scientists had a really major, major breakthrough on December 10th in Zurich, Germany. IBM scientists demonstrate that the quantum phenomenon of the famous, very famous, there goes my mind again, a famous the famous Bose-Einstein condensate experiment, which has been a huge area of research, and was only experimentally proven in 1995. I mean, the original theory was first predicted in the mid-1920s, but again, the technology, we weren't anywhere close in having the technology that would be able to actually do a demonstration of it. So IBM scientists were actually able to achieve this experiment at state room temperatures. So when they first did the, in 1995, they did it at extremely, extremely cold temperatures. So we're talking close to absolute zero. And this experiment was the first time you could actually see anything noticeable coming out of it. And so what does this really mean? This kind of ties into this whole new era of computing that's about to be unleashed within the next couple of years of, you know, we keep hearing the word quantum, but what does that really mean? And in terms of what we'll be able to do, it changes the game, because all of the processors that we have in our computers right now, they're zeros and ones. You get either a yes switch or a no switch, you know, an AND or exclusive OR gate. And, you know, the logic is all very binary. And take that word binary to heart, because it's literally, even if you feel like your computer does these dynamic, shady things that you don't understand, it's at the end of the day, it's either yes or no. And it's the number of patterns and strings of yeses and nos that we put together that makes applications. And that's going to entirely change when quantum processors come out. And they're already in kind of the scientific foothold right now. You can look up a lot of research on the quantum processor that Canada is developing with NASA Ames. That's been out there for a while now. And there is, in general, you know, a big, big research effort in quantum computing. And what does this all mean? It means that things are no longer going to be zeros and ones. They're going to be multiple states, because we're talking molecules now. We're talking atoms. So imagine the infinite amount of possible states you can have in the quantum world. You can't even begin to measure it. In the development processor that they're working on right now in the Canada NASA processor, I think they've achieved a term that you've never heard before, which is called 8 qubits. And what does that mean? It really means that we're no longer in that world of yes or no. Now we're in the world of 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And you may not think that's nothing, but imagine if every decision you have in that tree is now 8 steps instead of 2. And that means not only do you have a exponentially larger amount of possible computation paths in your processor, but 8 qubits, the difference is, with the binary processing that we have now, there's absolutely nothing we can do to make it more than the binary processor that it will always be. It'll always be an on switch or an off switch. But this 8 qubits, it may be 8 today, but in 10 years from now, it may be 16 qubits. Maybe 32 qubits. We may get to a number of qubits that we don't know what to do with. And when that happens, if we can actually achieve, even if we were able to achieve a stable qubit processor at something 8 or greater that became mainstream, the devices you have today would look childish. They would actually look like Stone Age technology. The scary part and the reality is that's going to happen in 20 years. And what we're seeing now, I mean, I would say 2013 was an extremely interesting year for the year of technology. I think we definitely had some innovation. We definitely had some companies starting to find new ways to put, you know, two and two together. But we really didn't get anything, you know, wow. And for me, what I told you last week, the first wow that no one realizes as an average guy is, was the release of the cognitive API for Watson. Because that's the first time you get developers that have access to cognition. And when you put that on top of the fact that the era of the qubit is upon us, and that there's going to be more than just 0 or 1 to the processors that we're running, that's when we really start to say the possibilities are endless. If you take a look at the specific reference that will be included in the show notes to the publication that came out about this, you'll see one of the major benefits that's coming out of this that is seen down the road is that this is going to be a massive change in down the road in how we are able to build powerhouse computer systems that are going to be able to process big data workloads. I mean, yeah, right now we're pretty good at petabytes. But this type of technology is going to be what makes petabytes turn into exabytes and make exabytes actually predictable analytics, insights. Again, big data is such an interesting term that it often gets thrown around in ways in which, you know, everyone, it's the greatest buzzword of
of this whole space. Everyone has to have analytics. Everyone has to have big data. To be honest, a very small percentage of people who work even closely in the space actually have a true definition of what big data is. And that there's several reasons for that, one of which is it's such a new field, it's emerging, that there no one has like the one best solution yet. The data sets are customized. The amount of time it takes to put these systems together is a highly specialized area. But you know, when you see big data in business and then big data in, you know, the way electricity is powered in a grid, those are two completely different topics. The data looks completely different. Data scientists have completely different approaches for analyzing that type of data. But imagine what is going to happen when in their toolkit they have the power of the qubit at hand. Not just a qubit processor, but start imagining big, because the era of the electron is out the door. And when we start getting to the era of the atomic, that is a huge manifold for big data. Because big data is so big, we've just exponentially increased the amount of space that big data can live in, but we've also increased the speed at which we can process and analyze that, which means that we can start dumping larger and larger workflows that a Hadoop cluster like today wouldn't have a prayer of standing a chance against. So this really is... there's, again, these things that we're seeing at the end of 2013 with the holidays and you know, several other factors, and the average guy isn't looking at this at all, right? But, and B, the people who do see this think it's just, you know, a freaky experiment that came out of Einstein's lab and they finally got it to work, right? But these types of technologies have real-world implications. And especially when you start to see this repeated theme that I've talked about in the show, the era of cognitive computing meets the era of programmed computing, we're very quickly starting to realize that the era of cognitive computing is one that exists in the quantum space and not the binary space that we exist in right now. So what remains unanswered for me is how will quantum computing interface with the programmed approaches that we have right now? Because still, a very important part of how we get analytics and understand big data comes from the development and workflow lifecycle of our programs. A lot of people who are involved in software development or in big data in general have a good software development background for designing some of the algorithms that process this data. So how that's going to change with the era of the qubit processor, what those operating systems are going to look like, what types of data we're going to be looking at, I mean, those are all questions that we won't start to scratch in the next couple of years. You know, it's a lot closer than what people are thinking right now. And for me, this last couple months in 2013 was a big indicator that we're getting along far faster than what people are thinking. So I think a lot of people, the average guy is going to be shocked when this stuff starts coming down the pipeline. Because
Christian, what do you think timeline-wise? I mean, you know, I know everybody's just speculating, but before we see some real use of this, 10 years, 20 years?
It's hard to say at what level, but I would say with safe certainty by 2030 you're going to start to see the emergence of some of this at a consumer based level. And again, I don't know whether that's enterprise consumer or whether that's average guy consumer yet, but it's much closer. And I think what people don't realize, and this if you go back and you read how Ferrucci built IBM Watson, you're going to gain a lot of insight into one of the great debates of computer science, and that is strong AI versus weak AI. And if you ever take a college lecture in artificial intelligence, an intro course, one of the first things you'll talk about in a great AI debate is it possible to have strong AI? And what do we define as strong AI? Typically, it's safe to say that in today's era, we define strong AI as machines that develop consciousness and develop cognition and can write syntactical rules without the need of a human. Now, in order to do that, most of the research that has been poured into strong AI is very focused around being able to model the human brain itself, meaning that we want to build machines that think like a human brain, operate like a human brain. But what do we find? We find that even though our processors in our computers can process at billions of cycles and hertz faster than our human brain is still far more smarter and far more intelligent. And we ask that question. We ask why. And one of the great debates in AI is, will we get to that point? And there's a very wide and differing range of what people think is going to happen in terms of will we develop that strong AI capability. But that's not really what I want you to focus on. What I want you to focus on is the relationship between strong AI and weak AI. Because what weak AI says is we build a system that replicates or matches or maybe even surpasses a particular skill or feature of human intelligence. So to give you an example, natural language processing in my lifetime will most likely become as good as or better than the human ability to speak. Computers will gain the ability to speak and communicate in the English language. And the rate at which natural language has progressed is remarkable. We're starting to see robots that are actually self-aware. And to give you context, if a bird looks at a mirror in a car, your car rear view mirror, the bird doesn't know that it's looking at itself. It thinks it's another bird and is going to start pecking that mirror. Well, guess what? We have robots now that actually know that it's them that they're looking in the mirror if they're sitting in a room of all other robots in that same dimension. So we tend to, in the department of weak AI, pick out specific aspects of human intelligence, human ability, and replicate those capabilities. Driving is another big one. I mean, if you want a slam dunk, automated cars and driving, it's here. It's going to be here in a couple of years. It's already here. A prime example, however, of weak AI. Swarm intelligence being one of the big motivating research factors behind that. Perceptron-based learning, cellular autonomy, replicating machines, all of these things come to look at specific aspects of weak AI. And one of the big debates when IBM put together Watson and one of the big problems Ferrucci had in dealing with some of the research issues was he got a lot of criticism that his Watson approach was not in any means strong AI. It was just another, quote, gimmick to make it look like it was smart and make it look like it was intelligent. But think about this. The machines that were available to do question answering before Watson had at most 20 to 30% accuracy with basic questions. I mean, we're talking maybe 2 to 3 word sentences that some of these computers couldn't blink an eyelash at and have any chance of being able to answer the question. And with Watson, we're not doing 2 or 3 word sentences. We're doing research journals and medical journals that take PhD students years to go through and read and understand and master. And not only are we reading them, but we're fully understanding them. We have full question answering. And when that first debut of Watson came out on Jeopardy in 2011, it was big because it was just almost as big as what we saw with Deep Blue, in the sense that Deep Blue is another perfect example of weak AI in play, where it learned a bunch of rules. It was a bunch of I don't remember what type of learning they used, but a lot of algorithms, a lot of sophistication. That was a champion of AI, but it was the same thing. It's weak AI. But what Ferrucci said was, I'm not really going to focus on whether or not this is weak AI or strong AI. All I know is that right now we're at this point in terms of capability, and I at least know that with something like Watson, we're gonna make a big jump to this point. And yeah, it may not be the strong AI point that you guys want, but if we're getting from here to here, that's got to be something worth thinking about and something worth getting to. And a lot of people, have to be extremely thankful that that executive decision was made, because the benefits that we're getting from this system are incredible. Again, go back and listen to some of my podcasts about the medical implications that this is having with WellPoint, Kettering Medical, and even in the commercial sector, this is taking off. But now it starts to enter a gray area where we've gotten to that perfect, I wouldn't say it's perfect, but we've gotten to a very refined weak AI version of Watson, and we have this ultimate goal of getting to strong AI. But in between is what I like to think of as the era of cognition, where we're using advanced programming techniques to continue and mimic and emulate that behavior to a point where these start to get closer and closer, where it might be a very, very complex sequence of algorithms, of weak AI technologies, and of syntactic parsing. But even if it's not true cognition, we're starting to blur the lines between the capabilities that we get out of weak AI and the capabilities that we could get out of strong AI. And so in this particular era, the ability to do information processing at these levels and possibly, I mean, we're already starting to see the potential for this to surpass, you know, significant human progress in some of these research areas. That is huge. If you look at strong AI, and you look at some of the people who the average guy would think are absolutely crazy, there's actually a consortium on the, quote, singularity. And the singularity says that by 2049, we are going to start to develop strong AI machines that are smarter than the human brain. And whether that's 2049 or 2149 doesn't really matter, because their point is, if we develop a machine that is autonomously thinking on its own and can think better than us, and we were able to build and create that machine with our level of intelligence, if that level of intelligence is greater than our own, you're damn right it can go and create its own robots and whatever. So the theory states, right? But if you take a step back from that and you kind of look at the middle ground between weak AI and strong AI, I like to come to kind of a middle ground where this it's going to be a very symbiotic relationship between man and machine, and we're already starting to see that. I mean, the commercial clothing, trendy gear, Google Glass, Samsung wristwatch. I mean, if you look at, there isn't one college student on the University of Maryland that doesn't have a laptop in their hand and isn't staring in front of a screen for more than 18 hours a day. Whether they're an English major or whether a computer science major, their life is becoming integrated in the machine. They might not have the chip in their head yet, but we're getting to that point. And the ability for these chips to do all this, we've made a lot of accomplishments in the binary era of information processing. But once this starts to get into the era of quantum information processing, really, I can't even begin to imagine where we're going to start to go and how quickly that may leap what capabilities we have in the cognitive era.
Yeah, well, it's going to need it, right? I mean, for that speed of processing to get that much information, to get past the, you know, the bandwidth problems of solving some of those equations and getting them out, it's going to have some of those advancements to make that work. So Christian Mike Howard said something funny in chat. He said, you know, the and I'll paraphrase him, you might want to watch your back. The future is going to come. They know who to knock off. They're worried about robots taking over in the future. So you might want to watch your back for, you know, somebody coming through a portal and, you know, taking care of the robots that you create. Hey, I don't want to cut you off, but I do, Kyle's got some good notes in there, and so I want to give you kind of 30 seconds to kind of wrap up that thought. Any other things that you want to, as you kind of want to summarize? Kyle, sorry to put you right behind that that in there, but Christian, anything to wrap that up?
Sure. The second half of that, which was, I could talk to you probably for another 2 hours.
And that's why we're going to have it. That's why we're breaking you out into your own podcast.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. But the second half of that, which you guys, I'll leave it as your food for thought for the week or 2 weeks or whatever. You think all that information processing is great. You think, oh my gosh, now we're going to have quantum this, quantum that, and we have all these different possible states. Well, guess what? We can barely deal with security when there's two states on and off. Yeah. What's going to happen when we have 4, 8, 16 states? And so the era of cybersecurity will be reborn, and that is a whole nother topic for a whole nother night. Really encourage you, if you're an average guy, to go out and just read some what I would like to call popular source articles on this. There's a lot. Definitely take a look at General Electric's Big Data Initiative with their power grid, and just start looking at some real-world use cases that are making a difference today, and then put on your future thinking cap and think about some of those weak AI and strong AI topics I try to introduce, and you may find yourself becoming a futuristic dreamer much quicker than you thought possible.
Christian, get some of those show notes there, or get some of those links, drop them into the show notes while we're chatting with Kyle, and we'll drop those in there so folks can take a peek at that. I dropped a few that I could find. Man, one I could barely read. And have a peek out there of some very, very, very cool science. One of the things I just alluded to, we're breaking Christian's Corner out and giving it its own podcast time. It'll be Christian and I'm just going to let Christian run with some of these topics. Some of them have been so good, and yet not kind of average guy stuff, and we know that, and we get that, but most of you that are listening are not average guys either, so we're going to break out Christian's Corner into its own podcast here in the spring sometime, and then get really Home Tech, or what we're going to rename Home Gadget Geeks, kind of back on track with some of that stuff. But I love these conversations, so don't get me wrong. I love being a part of this, and some of the cool future stuff that is there. Kyle, we brought you on to talk a little bit, give us an update. Last time we talked to you, you kind of give us an overview of the Tron Smart. Is that right? Let me get that Tron Smart MK908. Is that right? Wow, off the top of my head. Don't forget you're muted. And you've had some time in the field. The premise was, could you give it to your brother and work it as a desktop? Give us a little bit of an update on that as well.
Yep. Well, he's had it for Ryan. He's out in chat. Ryan.
He's out. Ryan's there. He's
an eighth grader. Yeah, he's had it for a couple months now, I think. I was talking to him tonight and a little bit before and stuff, and just kind of asked him, what works about this device? What do you like about this? Refresh. A Tron Smart Android mini PC is just it almost looks like an HDMI or USB dongle. It's just, half the size of a deck of playing cards, basically. It has HDMI, it runs Android, has USB on it, you can connect up your peripherals. I mean, it's kind of like Android tablet, but without the screen, and you provide your own. You can plug it in at a computer monitor, TV monitor, run your Android apps on it. So, I was thinking, the family only has one computer, it's being shared between four people. Can he use this to, maybe some entertainment, but, get some homework done on the side? So I just threw down in my notes some of the stuff that he used it for and that was able to work. He said he just, has it in his bedroom connected up to an old computer monitor. Originally he had it on the family TV, but he can just throw Pandora on there and just listen to Pandora right from that, so just kind of cool to have a media device to use that on. He has for his schoolwork, a class at school that for Bible, they would just have him write every week. He'd have to turn in like a two paragraph little mini essay, basically, eighth grade work, but he would just kind of crank that out right there. He bought a mouse for it. I think he already had a keyboard. He connected USB. It'll take USB or Bluetooth mice and keyboards. So he's been able to kind of crank those out, not have to kick somebody else in the family off the desktop computer. That's right in just using Google Docs. He's kind of all into the cloud and Google Docs there. So doing that. We were doing a Google Plus Hangout for a little bit between him and me. Something crashed on it, I guess, but at least got that off
the video. Was the video ever up and running, or was it audio only?
Video. We have not got video. He has one of those combo USB webcams that has the microphone built in. Yeah. And the video didn't work. I think that there are some models that will work with that. I think now since we've done this, I think that Tronsmart has come out with like version 2 of this unit also. So just so you're aware of that if you think
and just a reminder, Kyle did a video review for us. If you go out to theaverageguy.tv, search for Tronsmart, all one word, TronSmart, Tronsmart, and it'll come right up for you. There's a video, we call it a video review. And you can kind of get up to speed on that box, and Kyle does a nice job of going over it. So keep going, Kyle.
So I guess kind of I took away, he's still using it and at least playing with it or goofing around with it, using it for a little bit of homework. It's not like, I said, it's not the Christmas gift that he got for a week and then quit playing with, it's still something he's using. So that's positive. Just a couple things he was saying, something with the way on his monitor, and I don't remember if I tried Facebook or not, but something with Facebook didn't really handle the screen resolution very well. Back to the things that did work. YouTube worked fine usually. If he's gotten YouTube to work, and Skype was working pretty well.
Skype audio, at least, Skype video.
Yes,
Skype
I think IM. Skype. Yep, Skype audio and chat. I think. Okay. Something with Facebook, the screen resolution was a little off. Huh. And then he's had a couple stability things. He had to do a factory reset, and we took a little bit to figure out how to do that. You actually have to have the device. There's no power switch, so to power it on, you plug it in, and then it just automatically comes on. You actually have to be holding down the reset button while you plug it in at the same time, and then it'll kick over
and
do that.
Which is kind of common on those embedded systems, yep. like a Chromecast or some yep. of those other things. Yep. So this kind of reminds me of a Chromecast in a lot mm-hmm. of ways.
Yeah, similarities there, yep. too, which I just yep. got a Chromecast, too. So
that's oh, very cool. gadget too. Yep. Yeah, we have to do a Chromecast podcast.
Yep. So, he said sometimes it gets a little bit slow. So I think it's not as stable or as refined as like your tablets that you're going to buy, at least your quality tablets. If you buy a $49 tablet from Walgreens, it's probably not the best thing either. That's kind of,
I think we paid what, 60 bucks?
68, yeah, 68, something like that.
60, 70 bucks. We ordered it. It came from China. They are now shipping directly from Amazon. So if you head out to theaverageguy.tv/Amazon and search for TronSmart, there's actually a couple different models out there that you might want to take a look at if you're interested in doing something like this. Prices have come down a little bit as well yeah. on some of them. And so even since we started this, I'm trying to think, how long ago did we get this for you?
I think it was like, was it August or something?
Yeah, maybe so. Know. Part of the Average Guy Scholarship Fund that we kicked in for that, one of the first ones I think that we did. Yeah, TronSmart, so the MK908, it's running Google Android 4.1, and right now it's with 2 gig and I guess 2 gig of RAM and 8 gig of solid state memory, and those are $67.96 on Amazon right now if you want to. In fact, I'll drop a link into the chat so you guys can take a peek at this while we talk.
Yeah, and there's tons of other models too. I mean, you don't have to go with that one. There's lots of brands making them. I mean, there are kind of some, you know, more, I would say, established companies making them, and there's hundreds, it seems like hundreds of little tiny companies just throwing things together.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, your reliability is going to vary depending on what you pick up.
So they've got some great OSs to work with at this point. I think that's been mm-hmm. holding some things up, kind of Android pushed the envelope on the small OS on a device, and that's allowing for a lot of really interesting develop. Other Jim in chat asked, if you had to do it all over again, would you buy him a cheap, a cheap Linux tablet instead?
I think we got the experience we got was worth it. It's possible there's a more reliable one like this. I think to get an Android tablet that's worth having, I think you have to spend at least $100. I know there's a Lenovo, I think, is pushing. And was there an HP? Some Intel came out with one. Their Intel's goal was to get down under at $100. I think you have to be at least there to get a decent tablet, in my opinion. $150, you can get some of the you can get a Samsung. If $60 is your price point, then this is really kind of your option. So, and for what we were doing, we wanted to be able to hook it up to the big screen and hook it up to the a monitor and hook up the keyboards and all that stuff. So
he says there's a lot of crappy $40 tablets around mm-hmm. this year. You know, what'd be interesting is getting one of those $40 tablets and ripping that thing down.
Yeah. You know, see what's inside.
Yeah, exactly.
yep.
Yeah. At that yep. point, it'd be worth kind of hacking apart yep. to see what's under the hood, so to speak. I think after Christmas, I think there's going to be a flood. You know, there's so much crap on the market right now. If you look at all the electronics that are available, there's just so much junk out there as we get ready for Christmas. I think there's going to be some pretty good deals on electronics, that kind of crap after. And if you're a hacker, that's the stuff you pick up, tear apart, and see what, you know, see how they built it on the inside for sure.
Yep. So do you want me to talk about the Dell Venue 8?
Yeah,
or you got another question?
Yeah, I was just going to say, you made a swap on Craigslist with somebody. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about what you were able to pull off.
Yep. So I had a Nexus 7, 16 gigabyte, the 2013 edition. Everybody's probably familiar with that. It's probably one of the highest rated tablets, got great reviews, everything like that. Very solid piece of hardware. The screen resolution's great, like advertised. Comes with stock Android, extremely stable, all that kind of stuff, fine. But it was a 7-inch, retail $229, and I was using it for, I think I had it for a month or so, and two things that for me, one, I was like, well, literally nothing I do on that was different than what I would use an Android phone for. And I'm probably getting an Android phone here in the next week or so. So for me, I was just like, what's the point? And then second of all, I hold it up to next to my wife's phone, and she has a Note 2 with 5.5-inch screen, and this is a 7-inch screen. I'm like, well, what's the difference?
Not too much, right? Not too much.
I mean, what is the point of this, the 7-inch tablet next to her phone? So it
felt big when you bought it. And then you compare it to one of those, and you're like, oh shoot.
Yeah. So fantastic tablet. I mean, it is a great tablet, but for me, nothing that I do on a tablet in that, if for Android-wise, was even... there's no difference to me between an Android tablet and an Android phone when you're in the 7-inch range. And, you know, I might as well just have the phone. So I didn't need it. You know, I thought, you know, why not just throw it on Craigslist, see what I can get for it. Maybe I'll get money, maybe I'll get a swap, maybe I'll invest in a solid state hard drive or something for my computer. Who knows what I'll do something with it. I don't need this. So threw it up there, and some guy pings me on Craigslist and says, hey, I got that new Windows 8 tablet. It's like a Surface. And I'm like, what are you, like, you don't think I know what this, you know, he's, you know, playing to the popular thing that he says it's like a Surface, you know, because he doesn't figure the average guy's going to know what a Dell Venue 8 Pro is, right? And I'm like, well, which one are you talking about? And this, he's like, well, it's that Dell Venue 8 Pro. I'm like, oh, I'm, you know, that one, because this was like right the time when, you know, Dave over on Surface Keys is like blowing up and doing all his reviews. It was just like a week or two after that. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I'm thinking, you know, man, this one's $229. The one I'm swapping for, if I do this with this guy, this one retails at $299. Even if I sell it after a month, I'm still coming out. I can't lose on this deal.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And so I'm stepping up to 8-inch from 7-inch. So I'm getting that extra, you know, the a little bit bigger screen size. I'm getting to experience it's full Windows. It's not the Pro version, which I just figured out that I thought it was Windows 8 Pro. I was trying to join it to a domain, and that option was gone. I thought it was, because it has the word Pro in it, I thought it was the Pro edition of Windows.
So not Windows Pro, though.
Right, but right. Windows x86. And you know what? I think it's a... Is it a 32-bit processor?
Yeah, I think they are. Those are 32-bit. 2 gig of RAM.
But yeah, so...
Those are the Atom. Those are the new Atom processors.
But it's a quad-core Atom, and my desktop is a dual-core Pentium, so...
yeah, it might be more powerful, actually.
Yeah. So... yeah, I mean, the quad core Atom, but this thing is it is very impressive. I mean, super thin. I mean, Dave's already gone over pretty much all this, but in my use case, great device. And what I realized was, you know, when I had Android, there was nothing I could do differently that I couldn't do on my phone with an Android tablet. But this is super light and portable, and I can do almost everything that I would do on my PC and be portable with it.
Yeah.
You know, which there's no phone that even comes close to doing what your PC can do. So, yeah, for me it was great.
Do you pair it with a keyboard at all?
I've never plugged in a keyboard. I'm thinking about, you know, one of those ones like what you have there.
Yeah,
be
the
a great
wedge,
option.
What I want is
I need to get a case for it. I mean, I'm just afraid I won't take it out of the house because I'll break it if I do. There's a case, this rugged case from on Dell's website, but it says like ships is like 3 weeks before it ships, so I haven't bothered to look at that. But once I get a case on it, I think I would take it to work or something like that. But yeah, and what else did I have the notes pulled up on this thing?
Yeah, while you're thinking about that, you mentioned Dave's site. If you listen to the show and you don't know what he's referring to, so Dave McKay over at surfacegeeks.net. Oh, I don't know, about 4 weeks ago, said go back to show. I'm going to say between 30 and 40 somewhere. Dave, and actually between 35 and 45, let's say. Dave and the guys over at Surface Geeks cover that Venue 8 fairly nicely, so when it was brand new. So if you want to head out there, surfacegeeks.net, some good info on that as well. Anything else on that, Kyle?
I had something else, but I don't know.
That's okay. It'll come back to you. Talk to me a little bit about your experience with SkyDrive and Windows 8.1.
Yeah, I threw this... I threw this in the Home Server Show forums to kind of figure it out. And when I've tried to have to keep my files, the main documents and user files, on a separate hard drive from the OS. And I'm trying to go to USB so that no matter what computer, anywhere, I can blow out my system, start over, refresh, Windows 8 reset, install Linux, come back to Windows, whatever I need to do, and all I got to do is plug in USB, and I'm done with, and all my documents are there. But I'm also a big SkyDrive user. With SkyDrive on Windows 7 and Windows 8.0, the app, you could specify and just point the SkyDrive to that place, and it would pick it up, and bam, it was good to go. With Windows 8, it's really baked into the system, and it was giving me syncing error, and I tried to move the folder, and it tried to copy everything from one system to the other and merge the files, and it was giving me syncing errors for forever. And eventually, it seemed to be my all my Office documents. I went into the website and I edited one and synced it down and just kind of kept fiddling with it. And eventually it broke free and it kind of let me back in with the syncing isn't an issue. But now if I have to do it again, I don't know if what's going to happen, how I'm going to be able to get around that. So I really like the idea of having all my stuff on an external. That's maybe something to throw back in the forums again and see. So, I mean, yeah. I really like SkyDrive, really like to have the external, but I need them to work together, so.
Yeah, some things to get worked out with that for sure. All right, sounds good. Kyle, I know we're up against a little bit of a hard stop for you, so I've got some things to bring in for a landing here, and we'll hold you over until you can't go. Christian, if you're listening live, I want to ask Christian the question. And that question, the question I want to ask him is, what are the lessons that he learned in the first semester at school? And so we'll cover that in the post show. So stay around for that. Christian's going to kind of go through some lessons learned here in his first semester. Gary's out there, so I'm sure he'll be glad to hear that from you, Christian, going forward. And so stay around a little bit. Let me get through some housekeeping, and we'll wrap up the this part of the show as we do that. And so a couple things I want to let you know. First off, we got contacted from Power Rocks, which is the battery company that makes all those. If you see them on Facebook, they make all those 2,800 milliamp batteries. Plus, they make a whole bunch more. They contacted us for a review unit. Christopher Brown, one of our listeners, picked it up. He's out in California. He picked it up and reviewed it, and we just posted that on the site at theaverageguy.tv if you want to go and take a peek at that. Just if it's not on the front page, and maybe you're listening to this a while after, just type in Power Rocks into the search or Magic Stick, either one of those, and that review will come up. Try to get Chris to come on tonight. He was not available. We'll have him on in the next couple weeks to have him kind of just give us a review of those units. Pretty cool. Ironically, what I found out is their director of PR and marketing lives right here in Omaha, and she's a good friend of mine. I had no idea. They contacted me not knowing. They didn't know who I was, and I didn't know who they were, and we went through this, and one day I got a message on Facebook from my friend Carrie Adams, who we used to do Spartan Radio with way back in the day. If you're an average guy listener for a while, you'll remember Spartan Radio maybe if you listen to that. And she contacted me on Facebook, and we had a good laugh, and then I said, hey, do you want to come on the show? So in January, she's going to come on and talk about all the products. They sell a ton of battery products, and they're local right here in Omaha. So it'd be fun to have her on. You'll want to be at that show, and Carrie does a nice job in all that she does, so you want to come out and do that. It's in the next couple weeks. It's in January, so next 3 or 4 weeks. I have to go back and look exactly, but she'll be on. We are moving away from live stream. If you haven't noticed, the last 2 weeks we've been exclusively on YouTube, and I will be ditching our live stream account. From a video standpoint, they're going to delete those videos anyways. Live stream is getting very aggressive. If you're not using the videos, they're deleting them off the service. Kind of they give you one warning, and then they're gone. And so we'll be moving away from live stream if you're out there using that at all. Many of you weren't, so it's not such a big deal. But moving away from that, we will still continue to use live stream from a chat standpoint. So that'll go. Although I'm looking at Chatwing, which they contacted me as well. That might be a possibility going forward. The beauty of that, live stream doesn't work on Flash. Chatwing does. I'm sorry, it's the other way around. Live stream uses Flash. Chatwing doesn't. So for those of you who are trying to chat on mobile devices, you can't today. We switch to that provider, you will be able to. I don't know how that experience would be, but you can at least try. So we're working on that as well. I want to remind you, Dave Jackson and I are doing Ask the Podcast Coach on Saturday morning. So if you want to come out, we talk about all things podcasting. And so if you're an aspiring podcaster, you're thinking about podcasting, you'd like to know more about podcasting, head out and ask the podcast coach. Just go to schoolofpodcasting.com/live. And Dave, that's 9:30 Central, 10:30 Eastern. out there at schoolofpodcasting.com/live. And we have a good time. Dave is fun to podcast, and so you might want to come out. If you're interested in that or just bored on Saturday mornings, come out and listen to me. And we have a lot of good time. We want to thank you always for the Tech Scholarship Fund that we're doing through our Amazon affiliate, theaverageguy.tv/Amazon. Actually, a huge month 2 months ago, and we're going to get to buy maybe even two things coming up here at the end of December for some folks. I've already been contacted about one item. And we then I'd have room for a second one. So if you're thinking about something in that $100 price range, currently Gordon Schmidt has a Nest thermostat, and actually at the end of the beginning of January, January 2nd, I think is a Thursday, Kevin Schoonover, Gordon Schmidt are going to come on and talk about the Nest the smoke and fire and carbon monoxide detector that they just came out with. Meshable, you can network them together. They work with the Nest thermostat. Some really cool home automation stuff coming up January 2nd, 2014. All possible because you guys shop our Amazon link and we make a little money. Actually, we've been making pretty good money off that. Had a $200 a month in commissions, which is great. I appreciate that. And we turn those dollars back around into items for the Tech Scholarship Fund. So theaverageguy.tv/Amazon gets that all done. And then I want to remind you here at the end of the show, I'm going to play a little music. I'm actually going to play a whole song. I want you to hang around for it. It's Christmas time. And, if you're listening to this after Christmas, just hang tight. It'll be still a cool song. My son's band, Adelaide, put this song together over the last couple weeks, and they just put it out today. And I told them over the next three podcasts I'm going to use their music to open the show, and then we'll play a whole song at the end. And I'll have a link in the show notes if you want to go out. If you like it and you want to go out and download it, I put it in the chat as well. I'll do that again here shortly. But if you want to go out and download it, they're free. So it's kind of cool. These guys just did it as a fun project and threw it out there. Real proud of Phil, my son, for helping out with that and getting that done. And that's just at My Name is Rudolph. So if you can't remember that, MyNameIsRudolph.com. And like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, My Name is Rudolph. And you can get out there and download those for free, and they are pretty good. Christian, thank you. Hang around. I got some questions to ask you. Kyle, hang with us as long as you can. And thanks for coming out and joining us tonight. And we thank you, the listeners, for coming out and hanging with us through this evening. We got some good stuff for you coming in 2014, some exciting changes to the Average Guy Network. Excited to continue to work with Christian on some cool projects that we have going forward. For all the hosts that continue to come on the show with me, we got some great stuff ahead for you guys as well. Some really good stuff. I'm excited about 2014. There's some really cool stuff coming up, and so we're excited. Thanks for listening. We appreciate it. We'll be back next Thursday night. I got a whole bunch of cool guests lined up over December and January, and so you'll want to be a part of what we do live Thursday nights, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, out theaverageguy.tv live. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Okay.
See ya.
Kyle, hang around as long as you can. I know when you got to drop, but I want to ask Christian this question of what'd you learn in your first semester, my friend?
So first semester is one lesson that everyone should learn and then relearn several times, and that is time management. By far, you need to know when to say yes, when to say no. But really, you also need to learn the difference between working hard and working efficiently. And I think a lot of times, even, career people really can go back and analyze ways that they lose a lot of time in their day doing either mindless stuff or just not efficiently working. And so some recommendations being, if you're that guy that gets emails every 5 minutes or every 2 seconds or whatever, maybe some of them are people, but see what you're subscribed to, because chances are you've probably subscribed to half a dozen news feeds that you thought you were going to have the time to read for, and they're just distractions saying, read me, no, read me, no, read me, and your social media does that enough for you. So my first recommendation is, if you're on a lot of listservs on your email, just start clicking unsubscribe and start slimming down the diet. I think it's always really good to be informed about what's going on in the world around you and to be able to process that, but all things within moderation. So try to find ways in which you can kind of stream down that pipeline and not be constantly integrated.
Yeah, there's just a ton of crap out there, and
yeah.
you could just get inundated. I spent a half a day one time just unsubscribing through my email, just unsubscribing to crap, and it slowed down my box a little bit. I still got more to do, because those things come in waves, And I still have more to do, but it did slow some things down a bit. And I like this topic, Christian, because I've never been busier than I am right now. So, you know, there's a lot of things that you can do to be busy and not be overwhelmed. So keep going.
Number two, working efficiently sometimes means that you have to acknowledge that you're not invincible. And that means realizing that there are people in this world who aren't as smart as you, and realizing there's people that are a lot smarter than you. And you should use that to your advantage, because you will never learn, or you will never get better, or you'll never challenge or push yourself unless you are within the like-minded company of people who are at or exceeding your level. That's the only way you get better. And so when you get stuck on a problem, whether it's a Calculus 2 problem, or whether it's a research project at work, or whether it's, you know, looking at your company's budget and trying to figure out where to cut the numbers, you may not have the best answer. Even if you think you have the best answer, you may not know what other people's answers are, because you are so focused on how awesome yours is, you aren't listening to the other voices in the other in the conversation. And so there's this book, and oddly enough, if I show you this book, you're going to laugh. It's called They Say, I Say. And you might be surprised where I get this book from, but actually, this is from the world-class English 101 honors course taught here at the university. And you might think English 101 is a joke at most universities, but it's actually taken very seriously at Maryland, and I'm very glad to be in this course, because if you don't get anything out of becoming a better writer from this course, you take away two things. One, you take away that audience always matters. Audience, audience, audience. You need to target who you're speaking with, who you're writing to, and what you're reading about within the context of your audience. And oftentimes, we write things, we write blog posts, we write emails, we write research papers, and we never give a damn about who's reading that paper until long after they've read it. And yet the best written works of all time, whether we look at Letters from a Birmingham Jail of Martin Luther King Jr., or whether we look at, you know, letters written to Congress, or, I mean, any number of possible solutions. All of those letters that you see as being model examples in English or in human history in general are works that mastered being able to analyze their audience and be able to be relatable to their audience. So if you want to get along better with people in your office, whether you agree with them or disagree with them, if you want to be able to add your voice into an argument and drive an argument forward, you have to understand your audience, but you also have to be able to identify what they are saying. And what they means is those people around you. And once you can identify what they say, you then need to be able to put your voice into the conversation, and here's what I say. And then find that middle ground where everyone can discuss and say, well, these are things that we like, these are things that we don't like, and that drives the conversation forward. Not in any way to be a political commentary and to keep this as politically neutral as possible, the recent government shutdown is an absolute example of people not communicating. Whether you're a Democrat, Republican, whatever side of the issue you are, it was a failure of communication, and it was because they weren't talking to each other. You're talking at each other, and they weren't even talking to each other about the same things. They were making arguments in different directions. They weren't arguing over the same things even. They say, I say, that ideology and analyzing your audience is far more powerful than just, I can write an English paper for English 101.
It's great advice, Christian, and I think writing, you know, we are losing a little bit of that. It's one of the things that when I went back to a blog that I appreciated so much, and I just don't do enough of this anymore. I was doing a lot for a while. I did nothing for a long time. Then I was writing for about 2 years ago. I was writing a lot. I was really enjoying it, and then I got busy and I got away from it. There's another book out there also called The Art of Revision, and it talks about the keys into going in and, you know, writing is as much about revising as it is writing the original document that you put in there. And so that's a book when I went to school that I really enjoyed. And I'm not a writer, but I really enjoyed working through that, as it talks about how I think, you know, that book that you're talking about is kind of a practical guide to the content you put in there as far as what you say. And then this Art of Revision is a book that talks about how you go back through and slim that down, because I read a lot of times, and even my own stuff, I use too many words. in there, and I could do a lot better about slimming that down and getting the point and having it make sense. So The Art of Revision, another book that I used from school, from college, that is still a classic. You got to go there.
Yep, I'm out.
So, all right, man. Thanks a ton, man. Yep. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me on.
Great to see you. We'll have you back on here soon.
All right. Sounds good.
Thanks, man.
Bye.
Yeah. So another good book as well. What else, Christian?
If you're too afraid to ask stupid questions or even smart questions, really, there's no such thing as really dumb questions. And one of the most powerful things that you can do is learning how to ask smart questions, in the sense that while there are no good or bad questions, there are some ways you can word questions where you will get a lot more information out of the ways you can word other questions. So become a smart wordsmith in wording questions. And don't be afraid to ask people questions, because you will oftentimes find that the information that you are looking for most, you won't find from anything else except for that carefully worded question.
Yeah, and the other piece of advice I'd have on along those lines as well is, especially in the technical arena, if you're going to ask questions to folks who know more than you, add in ways to tell them what you've already done, right? People appreciate the hearing, I looked at this, I looked at this, I read some on this, and I read some on that. Now, you have to balance that between spending too much time researching where you're stuck and not spending any time at all, right? There are two extremes on that. You need to find that middle ground where, you know, everybody appreciates a little bit of research going into it before you get there, but in your question, allude to or cite areas that you've, hey, I looked at this, I looked at this, I looked at this, and I'm not finding what I need in those. That way the person listening on the other side has some idea of what you've done, right? It's just not that I get these questions in forums all the time, and it's like, hey, I need a computer. What should I buy? That, you know, that is the worst way to get your question answered. And in forums, I see people just leave those alone because you haven't given the person anything, you know, any specifics. There's lots of other questions around that. You know, what's your need and what's your budget and how are you going to use it and those kinds of things. So give as much information as you can.
That leads perfectly into my concluding one, which is
working
hard pays off and does far more than being a smart person in life. Just because you, you know, in your case, that person just asking what computer should I buy, it shows they don't want to do any work. They want you to do all the work for them and get something for nothing, right? And honestly, there are people who are brilliant here who honestly don't have to put in a lot of work to achieve that level. And there's other people like myself who have to put in hours to get to that same level of performance. And it's a different type of intelligence to be able to say, I work hard to get to that same level of competency. But in the long term, being able to work hard will carry you much farther along than just being able to spit out academic answers at a fast rate of speed. Because eventually, the two can balance each other out, and you might, over the course of putting in consistent time and work into a particular field of mastery, find that your hard work is making you faster, but at the same time, you're building those skills of discipline and work and time management and learning to kind of keep yourself on pace and put the time in where you need to. And eventually that catches up for people who don't have those skills, especially in college, where it's a water hose of information. Your survival is dependent on avoiding the multitude of germs within the campus life, avoiding you know, the pitfalls of not getting 3 square meals a day and 8 hours of sleep a night, and, you know, keeping a cool head where, yeah, there's a lot of work to do, yeah, there's a lot of distractions all around, there's plenty of things to get involved with on campus. You most of the times need to find things to say no to, not the things to say yes to. And sometimes getting back to basics and remembering that all good things most oftentimes stem from hard work is perhaps what will carry you farthest in a college environment, yet alone in life.
Yeah, I think those are three fantastic points, Christian. We've commented a lot in the show, and as Gary's out there listening, hope, you know, we are very fortunate to have you on the podcast. I still wonder why you come back each week and podcast with me. You know, talking of being smarter than the youth being smarter than the elderly. You know, certainly you are wise for your age in a lot of ways, and you're doing very well there. So congratulations on surviving your first semester. What do you think you'll do different in your second semester going into the spring? Any things where you're like, hey, I'm gonna go about this just a smidge differently?
Yeah, for me, it's definitely about this semester, multitasking can be beneficial in high school and it can be detrimental in college. So for me, next semester I'm going to focus a lot more on compartmentalizing things and making, more predetermined time for trying to always be a step ahead instead of trying to stay at par. Mm-hmm. Because especially in college where you can get an unexpected change in workload at any moment's notice, it always helps to be one step ahead in case that does happen so that you at least break even instead of falling behind. Because once you start even on a small thing, fall behind the slightest, it perpetually makes it harder and harder to catch back up to where you were originally. So for me, it's going to be really about, compartmentalizing a lot of the same things I said earlier, working on efficiency of work, not working excessively hard, and trying to, it's really about maximizing every minute in the day that you get. And maximizing your time does not mean cutting on sleep. And I learned that relatively quickly before I got to college, but there's a lot of people here who haven't the slightest idea about that. Yeah. But it's, there's a time and place for that, don't get me wrong. But try and avoid it whenever it's possible, because for me, one of the big drawbacks for me this semester was I did get low on sleep, and I caught a flu and a bug, and it set me back. When you get sick in college, whether it's just like one of those long out nasty drawn colds, or whether you're throwing up or anything like that, you're falling back just by nature of being defined as sick. So it's like if you can't do anything else, avoid getting sick during college. Take excessive vitamin C and food.
Well,
supplements,
rest and good food and some simple things help keep you, help keep you in your best possible shape. A little bit of exercise sometimes is a good thing to keep you healthy going on. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, those are the tough. I always say when you're in school, the hard part is when you're young, you always think, it's hard to think beyond Friday night. Everything is about the here and now and what's going on right now. And I'm sure you see tons of that going on. And sometimes kids will not sacrifice, they'll have, instead of sacrificing fun, they'll sacrifice sleep. And there's plenty of time for fun in life. And sleep is super important. And I'm a total hypocrite here, because even in my 40s, I don't get as much as I should. Because I work so much and what I'm doing and staying up too late and these kinds of things, but it is super super important, and you just can't you just can't get enough of it, and so it's one of those kinds of things. You want to live a little bit longer, you want to live a little bit healthier, get a little bit more sleep, and that oftentimes can we caffeinate ourselves to death, right? And so we're just hopped up all day long, and then I know guys that drink that caffeine well into the evening, and it's like, no wonder you're not getting any sleep. You're all jacked up.
Yeah. No.
Although there are times when you have to sacrifice, right? There are times that if you're staying up for work and you got to get stuff done, you just got to do that. If you got to burn an all-nighter, or you got to stay up in the evening and get stuff done, you're working, sacrificing sleep for that. Sometimes that's necessary, and that's just life, right? You just got to get through that. But to trade fun for sleep, well, get your ass in bed.
Yeah.
That's what I say. So, well, cool. Well, it's fun to see you get through this first semester. I can't believe finals are next week for you.
Yeah, Monday, Tuesday, and get my $69 ticket back home Wednesday.
Nice, nicely done. Yeah. You're flying back, or?
Yeah, Southwest gave me a deal.
Nice, $59.
$69.
Yeah, still it's.
Oh, that's the cheapest ticket I've ever purchased before on an airplane. So.
So when do you leave? When's your flight back?
It might not be a flight back. Oh. It might be a drive back.
No. I mean, when do you leave to go home?
Oh, the 18th.
So I'm just thinking through. I'm thinking through podcasts here. So.
Wednesday. So I'll be back for the show.
Oh, so you'll do next week home from the bedroom. I miss the bedroom.
Yeah, the bedroom will be back in the scene, in the spotlight for at least a month. So.
I miss the old bedroom. That's we've been podcasting from there for years now, and I kind of miss seeing that. So, Mike Howard says he gets 4 to 5 hours a night. I'm kind of. I'm in the 6 hour boat, and that's not enough. I should be getting the other weekend. I woke up early. Oh, it's Thanksgiving weekend. I woke up early both mornings to do stuff. I ran, you know, Thanksgiving one morning, and then I ran the next morning. And by Saturday, I was ripping people's heads off. I was not a happy camper, and you could feel it. You know, you that when you're really tired in your head, you just kind of get it feels like it's gonna just like come off your body. And I went to bed at 3 or 2. I woke up at 5. Oh, life was so much better after a 3 hour nap. Are you kidding me? That was awesome. I'm like, why don't I do this? This feels so good. It's like one of those things, you know, it feels so good. Why don't you do more of it? Because it feels so good, you know? It's just dumb. It's just dumb that we don't do more kinds of stuff like that. So, well, anyways, congrats on getting your way through the first semester. What courses do you have next semester?
Oh, next semester is going to be a fun one. I'm taking CMSC 216, Introduction to Computer Systems, and please don't be fooled by the word introduction. it's what that word means is it's all low level C, but it's not a course on how to program in C. It is a course on machine instructions, so memory to CPU interaction, registers, DRAM tables, CPU instruction sets, you name it. That's intro to computer systems.
What introduction means is you should have done an introduction before you got there.
Yeah, which is what my winter break's going to be. CMSC 250, Discrete Mathematics, which deals with a lot of the mathematical... it's a kind of interesting mix of data structures, some algorithm discussion, and kind of the math of a computer science student. Then following from that, I'll be taking a honors for part of my cybersecurity honor citation. We'll be taking a honors 239 course on privacy versus in-your-face government, which should be an interesting lecture series. We'll be taking Hacks 102, which is the second requirement course for my first cybersecurity citation, and that'll be dealing with exploiting honeypots and doing a honeypot project with penetration testing. And then I will be getting 3 credits for the research that I do outside of school with work. And then I'll also probably pick up 3 credits for Gen Ed with oral communication.
Wow.
So
yeah, done.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It'll be a fun one.
Yeah, it will be a fun one. I think that's fun.
Well, if I drop anything, I'll probably drop comm and just take that, because I'm taking, that's 20 credits right there.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, three of it is with work, which I'm doing now and just not getting credit for. So, I mean, it kind of washes out, but I want to see how things go.
Yeah. Wow. Well, very cool. Very cool. Well, we probably shouldn't keep you around too much longer. I'm sure you got homework to do to get ready for finals.
Yeah, we should drop off there.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thanks again, Christian.
I do want to thank everyone for coming out. Looks like we had a good turnout, 15 people.
We had a good crowd tonight.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys.
The chat room was good and intelligent. That's always nice to have those guys out there. I'm going to leave this in. I'm going to append this to the end of the podcast, and so for... if you've made it all this way in the podcast, you're definitely one of our most engaged listeners out there. And we'll just remind you to subscribe to the podcast. We have all the links out there that are available for you, iTunes and Xbox Marketplace, all over at theaverageguy.tv. And you can, like I said before, you can catch us show live 8 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central, averageguy.tv/live. And Christian will call it a night. So, guys, and I'm going to end the broadcast with this as well. We won't have a post show. We'll just have the post show. So, Christian, get some work done, get some rest, guys. Thanks for joining us out there this evening, and we'll do it all again next week. Christian will be doing it from your room there.
You got it,
in Buffalo. And then let me quick look up on the schedule because I can't remember. Next week we have, besides having Christian at home. Actually, we got John Zadler back on. He's got some new Western Digital equipment, so we're going to talk some hard drives and servers and storage and backup, and you can give us the status of how things are at home after leaving Gary by himself with the equipment for a while.
Yeah.
Gary's been alone with the equipment, Christian. I'm not sure.
Well,
to
be true, we just got our third acquisition. We got a $187 win on another EX495 on eBay.
Oh,
so,
man, nice.
We now have three mini toasters with the quad core Xeons in them. Wow. So
Wow.
We're burning up the place.
Well, Gary's not out there. I was hoping he was out there. So.
He said it dropped him off the chat for some reason.
Oh, shoot. Well, that's a bummer. So other Jim's asking for the song. Actually, the song is coming up. If you're listening to the recorded version, the song is coming up right now. I'm not going to play it for you guys live because I didn't have it set up. It will be in the recorded version. So you'll have to go out. If you're listening live, head out to the recorded version this weekend and get the song. It's going to be pretty cool. And actually, if you guys want to listen to that, I will hang tight for just 1 second. I'll drop you the link in chat as we go. But with that, we'll end it. Watch the chat room. Christian, thanks, man. Have a good evening.
Thanks. Take care, everyone.
All right. We'll see you guys. Thanks.
It was cold. I couldn't feel it. Hidden so they couldn't see us. I still can't see the reason you were wasting your time with me. I was tied up in your lashes. You sang me to molasses. Now there's no way that that red bow's gonna release me. Oh, Clarice, just maybe you'll let me hold you in my arms and take me somewhere we can shine. Don't wanna be alone tonight. Forget their warnings. We'll fly away from here and chase the morning where we can glow bright. Our love will set the sky alight. My heart is beating faster. Your love is what I'm after. Cause all the winter in the world, it can't take that away from me. My dreams, I'm falling under. Candy cane, sugar slumber, and I'm not waking up till you want me. Oh, Clarice, just maybe you'll let me hold you in my arms and take me somewhere we can shine. Don't wanna be alone tonight. Forget their warnings, we'll fly away from. Just maybe you'll let me hold you in my arms and take me somewhere we can shine. Don't wanna be alone tonight. Forget their warnings. We'll fly away from here and chase the morning.